Game day at my place is kind of a big deal. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor patio setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grilling accessories, Wayfair's got it all, and it shows up fast. I'm talking championship level, fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game and head to Wayfair.com now to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
So right now we're going to tie in two worlds, the New York Football Giants and WWE. In studio right now joining us, wrestling royalty, Natty Neidhardt. Her book is out. We're on YouTube as well.
That's awesome.
I'm there for you.
The Last Heart Beating. I'm like 110 pages through so far. I'm enjoying it. So we'll get to that in just a second, Natty. But Cam Scataboo, were you at Raw last night?
I wasn't.
Okay.
No.
So at Raw last night, we were there, and Cam Scataboo of the Giants was there. He was sitting front row.
I saw that.
He's got a busted up ankle, and he got into a little physical
scuffle.
Yes, with Dom Mysterio. Mm-hmm. BT called him out before, saying it's not a good thing for the Giants. We were talking about that, and then Scataboo, you have it up there.
Scataboo has reached out directly to WFAN, the newsroom here at WFAN. Cam took the video that we had, and he subtweeted the video, and then he responded very respectfully. Foot was off the ground, and the boys had my back, with a couple of exclamations there. And then he had a salute emoji. Trust me, wouldn't do anything to jeopardize anything, my G.
Okay.
So then two more exclamation points to let us know he was serious.
So that's from Scataboo. Now, from a wrestler's perspective here, you know, we're the nut job sports fans.
Right.
Like, you're hurt. You're not playing. You're out for the year. What are you doing messing around getting involved with wrestling?
Listen, boys will be boys. And I will say that when it comes to the love of the game, I cannot believe how many people are such massive fans. I mean, I can't believe it. They're massive fans of WWE. And I loved the dynamic between, you know, Judgment Day, which Dom and his guys, of course, you know, JD McDonagh and Finn Balor. Like, I love that energy of them with, you know, people that are in your mainstream sports. Like,
right.
Whether we do stuff with people in basketball, we do stuff with people in football, we do stuff with people, like, we don't discriminate.
Is it on you to protect the athlete in that, the football player in that
or
spot?
The celebrity.
Here's the thing. Bottom line is, don't ever shove a pro wrestler. Because energy matches energy, and sometimes you got to fight fire with fire. So if somebody, listen, if Beyonce comes to a WWE event and she wants to shove me, she's getting put in a sharpshooter.
There you go. Ooh, that's something a lot of us would pay to see, by the way. All right, so, and this goes back in the day, like Dennis Rodman and Shaq and Karl Malone.
Yes,
You know, even like Liberace, the ring announcer, Billy Martin, first WrestleMania.
Cyndi Lauper,
yeah. 100%. Right. Cyndi with the Rock and Roll Connection. Like, that is the strength of the WWE, the ability to just go mainstream, and that's why it's where it's at.
And they bring people together, and it's so cool, especially with us being on Netflix, because Netflix has, you know, 80% of the world can watch Netflix. And so it's opened us up to a different audience that we're just expanding. It's just there's so much visibility. And so that's the cool thing, is that I've worked with WWE now for, in January, it'll be 19 uninterrupted years.
Wow. Oh,
and grew up with it, with my dad being a big, you know, star in the 80s, my uncles, my grandfather, of course, like big family business.
Oh, we know.
And, but like, I love that wrestling, professional wrestling, what we do in WWE, we bring people together. We bring people together from every walk of life that, you know, you meet people that you're like, oh my gosh, I had no idea that they were a wrestling fan. Even the stuff that we did, you know, we do so much community outreach work. Like, WWE has something called Connor's Cure, where we also work with kids that are terminally ill. We meet them. We go to hospitals all over the country, all over the world. And like, it's not just athletes. The company really brings people together in the best way. So that's what I love about, you never know what's going to happen at a show. You never know who's going to show up. And people just never forget those moments, even getting shoved by Dominic Mysterio.
BT and Sal in studio with Natty Neidhardt. Have you ever had to work with a celebrity turn wrestler before? I'm assuming you've had to train many before.
I mean, I worked with Betty White. I've worked with the Muppets. Listen, Kermit the Frog can grab a headlock.
Really?
Let me tell you that much.
How do you wrestle a Muppet? That's great. I didn't know that one.
I mean, I've worked with a lot of celebrities.
Easy. We dumped it.
Okay, good. Yeah.
We're good. Got it.
Natty
dropping F-bombs on the air with BT and Sal. Right.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. So Kermit and Miss Piggy were my favorites, but...
And I was terrified of Animal when I was a kid. Animal scared the hell out of me.
By
the
way,
that wacko.
Grumpy Cat was a guest one time at WWE. We had Grumpy Cat there. And I will tell you, everybody was fangirling, fanguying over Grumpy Cat. Like, that really? Was a celebrity that everybody wanted a photo with. So all those people out there that say they're more dog people than cat people,
yeah,
they like Grumpy Cat.
Well, I'm a dog guy, gonna be honest with you. Yeah. So Sal knows this. I get lost on YouTube going back to the 80s and just watching all, whether it's a Piper's Pit. Like, I love the old interviews, right? That's really the first thing that kind of sucked me in, that pulled me into wrestling. Of course, you grew up around it, but did you love it right away, or did you try to resist it right away?
I mean, it's just been part of my family for so long, and like, I think I was always intrigued by it from the very beginning, but my grandfather didn't really want the girls in the family doing it, because back when he was, you know, alive and promoting shows and raising his kids, it was more of a, you know, it's a male-dominated world. But of course, now we've seen over the last, I mean, especially over the last decade, we've seen so much growth for women in wrestling that, like, I'm so happy that I pursued it. And by the way, when you guys know what it's like when your parents tell you not to do something.
Right.
My dad was like, you're not being a wrestler. You're not getting into the business. You're not doing it. And I document that in my book, The Last Heart Beating. But because my dad kept telling me no, I was like, I just wanted to do it to prove him wrong. You know, and so that was a big, there's a very big thread in my book, in the story of my book about, like, my dad didn't want me doing it. I did it against his wishes, and then he ended up becoming my biggest cheerleader. I dedicate the book to my dad, but I also like the journey that I take with my dad on the book, because, you know, all relationships are complicated. So while I dedicate the book to him, we go through a lot of ups and downs in the book that people don't know until they read the book. So many people, you know, have told me that they think they know my story, and they're like, until I read the book. Mick Foley is actually reading my book right now. And Mick was like, Natty, I had no idea. He's like, I just had no idea. I had no idea until I started reading the book. And he's like, I haven't been able to put it down. So I love that people are becoming surprised, but like in the best way, where they're seeing a reflection of themselves in the book.
You know, that's exactly how I feel. Now, I know you from Total Divas. I love that show. My wife and I used to watch it years ago. And I know you a little bit from wrestling, following it in and out over the course of the years. But for somebody growing up in the 80s, like your father, Jim the Anvil Neidhart. But I think that there's this perception of, okay, well, Natty Neidhart, she's a part of the Hart family. Okay, first female, which is a whole nother element that you had to overcome, which is incredible.
Yes.
Even more impressive than all the dudes, because with one guy after another, you're breaking through as the first female in the Hart family. But also how difficult it was growing up in an environment that was not really healthy with the way that your dad had his lifestyle.
Well, and for me, I was in a family where, like, you grew up with a family of Hall of Famers, and they're all men. You know, I'm not going to be you look at my dad, my uncles, Bret Hart, Owen Hart, the British Bulldogs, Davey Boy Smith, Dynamite Kid, my grandfather, Stu Hart. You know, they're all like Hall of Famers and they're all incredible. But I was the one that was the least likely to survive in this business. And so I'm the only one that's still in WWE, still doing it, you know, at this level. So it's funny because I was the one that was least likely to make it. And then I'm, you know, carrying on the family's legacy, which is huge. But that's what I love about the story, is that so many people think, like, and listen, if I was on the outside looking in, I'd go, wow, well, of course she had, like, her family's this, you know, all these legendary names. Like, of course it was easy for her to get into WWE. I said this on Cody Rhodes' podcast, but I was like, back in the day, I just wished so much that somebody could have made a call. Like, just pick up the damn phone. Give, you know, the powers that be a phone call and say, please just give my niece a chance, or give my daughter a chance, or give my granddaughter a chance. We weren't in a place when I was trying to get into the business. We weren't in a place with WWE where we could really do that, because my dad wasn't connected to the company. My Brett was still going through stuff with the company. Yep. My grandfather wasn't alive. Owen wasn't alive. So my Uncle Davey wasn't alive. So it was very, very hard. Now, 20 years later, I am so grateful that nobody ever picked up a phone and said, please help Natty, because I had to scratch and claw and fight tooth and nail to get everything I had. And like, I wouldn't have this insane, this book has just been like, it's been, I think it's the best thing I've ever done.
Yeah, you're bubbling with enthusiasm. It's great.
It's awesome.
It's well, we left the book in a way that people really want more, so there is still more to come. I didn't leave on a ending. We didn't end it. There's a lot more to come, and I can't announce what's coming next, but we left it in a way that the only negative feedback that I'm getting about this book is people are sad that it ends. They're like, I'm sad that it's over. I just wanted to keep going. And so I just love the way that it's making people feel. If I hadn't had that journey that I had in the book or in my career, I would never have been able to write this book. If I didn't go through all of those things, it's like the movie that, have you guys ever seen The Shawshank Redemption?
It's one of the best of all
time.
So it is my favorite movie ever. Phenomenal.
And I love that he, you know, Andy Dufresne, the main character of that movie, I love that he has to go through so much. And he...
Game day at my place is kind of a big deal. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor patio setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grilling accessories, Wayfair's got it all, and it shows up fast. I'm talking championship level, fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game and head to Wayfair.com now to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
Like, makes it out on the other side, and he not only makes it out, but he is not, he lives to tell his story, and he's not broke or broken. And that is the true measure of success. And that's a big, big theme in my book is that, you know, in a world where everybody in my family has done everything, I'm not going to be the first woman to main event WrestleMania. I won't be the first person to get into the Hall of Fame. I won't be the first person to win a championship in my family. But I will be the first person in this family to leave this business not broke and not broken and able to look at myself in the mirror and, like, realize what's real in life.
Yeah.
That's what's real.
It seems like one of the, and not to put myself in your dad's mind or Brett's mind or anybody that from your family, but it seems like the older generation has a lot of resentment for a lot of reasons.
Yeah.
But so many of which
you're
are
not,
real,
you're
by
not
the
wrong.
Way.
Yeah.
Whether it's the way their bodies are, the way they were wrestling 350 times a year, lack of money, you know, lack of health. Do you ever, while your entry into the field was hard and it actually made it better for you downstream, I mean, you ever think about what your family went through in terms of the road? Like, that is something that you didn't have to deal with. Like, living on the road in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s as a wrestler, how was your dad even present after coming back from being away?
Great question.
How are you a normal human being?
My dad was gone for most of my childhood. He was gone on the road like 300 days a year. So we never got to spend time with him. Like, he would come home for 2 days, he'd be gone for 28 days. And that was the norm. And back then, back in the day, they didn't have what we have today. They didn't have the amazing medical that we have in WWE. They didn't have, you know, like in WWE, they talk to us so they work with us on so many different areas. They have incredible they work with an incredible group that, you know, they protect people as far as like their mental health and like work with people on their financial stuff. I mean, they even have dietitians for us and people that are financial planners. We have every resource in the sun under the sun right now to do to be successful in WWE. But back when my dad was
a
wrestler,
took a needle and kept going.
Well,
understandably,
they didn't have guaranteed contracts. So, like, for example, if my dad got hurt, he didn't work, and then his family didn't eat.
Yeah.
So they have to keep working and pushing through injuries, because if they didn't work or wrestle, they didn't get paid.
Wow.
So that's the way it worked back then.
Yep.
So it's really cool to see now the way that, you know, the industry has changed so much, and WWE is, you know, we're the largest entertainment company in the world. TKO, they own UFC and WWE. It's huge and it's amazing, and we just have every resource to succeed. So I will say that I'm so grateful that I'm in a place in my life where I'm not bitter. I'm happy. I wake up every day with gratitude. I wake up every day pain-free. I just feel good. I love where I'm at in my life. I love the people that I work with. I love my career. But when people speak out, especially people in my family, and they speak about their, you know, what upset them and hard things that they went through and this and that, they have earned the right to have their voice. And if they feel a certain way, they feel a certain way. You know, when people will say to me, well, this person said this or that person said that, everybody is allowed to feel how they want to feel, and their feelings to me are validated. If Brett went through a lot in his career, and he had a very serious injury that was career ending. I think his injury still really affects him today. We've lost a lot in the industry, including my uncle Owen, and, you know, our family and Brett included. He's, you know, just been through so much. So whenever he feels how he feels. I always just say he's allowed to feel how he wants to feel because he paid his dues, you know. And I'm not saying his feelings are always my feelings, yep, because I'm just in a different place in my life and I've had a very, very different career. But Brett especially, he wrote the introduction to my book, which is like, it's the foreword before the foreword. and he wrote the most beautiful introduction that really, like, he just knew the story before I even told the story. And I will always just be so grateful to him. He's reading the book right now and he's texting me and telling me how, like, it's making him laugh and cry and everything in between. So, and John Cena actually read my book.
Look at you.
You read it already?
John Cena came to the dungeon a couple weeks ago, and he came in.
You still have the dungeon there?
We have a new dungeon that my husband and I created. It's becoming very popular. But John had reached out and sent me a text, and he goes, "Hey, Natty, like, can I come to the dungeon? I want to just go there." I thought he was coming in to train. Like, I thought he was, like, going to come in and, like, run the ropes or whatever. I said, "John, I'll give you a key, and you can just come in privately. That way you don't have to, like, you know, get swarmed with everybody trying to take photos and, like, you know, all of our students that
can we come? Can young, you open it up young, for us at some us, point?
Yes,
we'll come.
Yeah. Of course, I'd you guys can to. Come. So John goes, "No, Natty, I want to come to your ring during your practice, and I want to give a master class." Like, basically,
yeah.
He came in, spent the whole night with us, showed up 20 minutes early. That's what a damn pro he is. Yep. Gave a master class to over 25 of our students at the dungeon. Gave basically just, he wanted to give everybody the answers to the test. He was like, this is, I want to give you guys everything I know about how to succeed in this business. Mm. So at the end of the night, I gave him my book. And I was like, just wanted you to have this. And I wrote a little message for him inside of it, just about gratitude and what he means to me in the industry. The next day, he goes, "I was flipping through the book. I started reading it." He goes, "I couldn't put it down."
Wow.
That night, because I don't know if this is one of the busiest guys in the world. Right. That night, John sent me a text and he goes, "Natty," he goes, "I finished the book." He goes, "Wow, wow, wow." He goes, "I was bawling my eyes out." If you can make John Cena cry.
Yeah, that's a great job. If you can get him to read your book and then get him to cry.
I think he hadn't planned on reading it. And then when you start, that's the thing about the book is that it's meant to be kind of a page. It's a big page turner and there's a lot of cliffhangers, but it's a story.
Can I tell you what I like about it? By the way, BT and Sal in studio, Natty Neidhart. We'll take a break in a second here and come back and have another segment with you. The thing that I was looking at it from was a child's perspective, because at the time growing up when I was a fan of your father, we're similar age, I think.
Yes. Okay. 29.
Yeah. Exactly, Natty. Yeah. But we're similar age, so I'm looking at it through the lens of, wow, Jim the Anvil Neidhart, your father, and all the access to all the wrestlers, Hulk Hogan and Beefcake and his Speedo and all that stuff coming out. So that's what she talks about in the book. But then the fact that you kind of lost it all. Not you, but your father lost it all. And you and your mother and your sisters picking up the slack and having to go to work. That's not something that you think of when you think of, wow, what must it be like to be Jim the Anvil Neidhart's children?
Yeah.
That was a rough upbringing.
Well, we were homeless. And I know you guys have to go to break, but let's pick back up on that, because, you know, there's a chapter in the book where I write about us being homeless.
Yeah.
And everybody at school saw my dad as a WWE superstar and they were like, "They're rich, they're famous, they have all this money." And we didn't have anywhere to live. And so, you know, we were going through a very hard time where we didn't know where we were going to get our next meal. We didn't know where we were going to sleep. But I loved being able to share it, because on the other side of that tough part of our lives is hope.
Only the first female of the Hart family to go as far as you have taken it, but also the way that you had to get in, and there's no, like, easy way to say this, the fact that you were told that you needed to lose 30 pounds before you even got, like, your first shot, and then you immediately taking that and losing 30 pounds to get in, basically making it more about the physical nature of things as opposed to your in-ring ability.
Well, back when I was trying to get hired, it was like there was a different demand for what they wanted for the girls. And so that's the thing, is that's, you know, to me, I look back on it and I don't feel like angry about it. I feel like it was just, it's an aesthetic industry. And it's like, you know, it's especially like if somebody's trying to get into a movie or get a movie part, for example, like if they're trying to get on as a ballerina in a movie, they can't have a 300 pound ballerina. You know what I mean? Like, it's when I was trying to get hired by WWE, that's what they wanted. They wanted models. They wanted models. They wanted dancers. They wanted girls that looked like they came out of a Victoria's Secret catalog. I was never fat, but I was also, when I look back at the photos that I was sending in and the tapes, and like I was sending in, like, you know, just like promo shots, headshots, but like I was like, I mean, I wouldn't have hired me. I just looked like I had all this baby fat. I wasn't polished. I was like, I am mortified now thinking about the stuff that I sent them. I'm like, Natty, you didn't even brush your hair in that picture and you were sending it to WWE. Like, but they wanted, you know, they wanted their women to look a certain way, and it was, you know, a glamorous look. And of course, I was a little, I'm a recovering tomboy. So I was very rough around the edges. I trained with men in the dungeon. I was wrestling in Japan. I was, you know, 30 pounds heavier than what I am right now. So it wasn't like I was fat, but listen, when your dad is Jim the Anvil Neidhart, you're just going to be a little beefy.
You might there, BT. I don't think
you're. Okay. We were done during the break there. Did your dad walk around with that sadistic laugh here? And you immediately said, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that might be, it's the scariest, craziest laugh I've ever heard. And I was going to ask you, really, because it's about you, not so much about your dad, but about your story. You know, how did you date? I mean, so you lost the weight to get involved in wrestling, but how does somebody ring your doorbell and get accepted by those six or seven lunatics who were standing behind you?
They didn't ring the doorbell. That's the thing, is that, like, I didn't have anybody ringing the doorbell because my dad was not he wasn't an approachable father for people to ask me out on a date. So I never dated anyone. I never, ever, ever, ever had a date with a guy. Until TJ is my first and only love. Like, and that's actually a really cool thing in the story, is that there's a love story in this. You know, my dad, our childhood was very rocky, which is documented in the book. And, my dad, it was very volatile. There was ups and downs. We talked a little bit earlier about, you know, my dad was struggling a lot with demons, and I write about this in the book. My dad, you know, we ended up finding out that my dad had a traumatic brain injury. But I didn't know that when we were growing up. We didn't realize that until much, much later on in my life.
CTE, right?
And my dad had a brain injury. Mm. And so after he passed away, we were able to study his brain. We were able to see that his very, very early years of playing tackle football without a helmet, you know, my dad would brag about it. He would talk about, you know, when I was young, I would get my bell rung, and my coaches just admired me and respected me so much because I would just keep playing. I would just go back out on the field and I would play. And he kind of wore it. I mean, he wore it as a badge of honor.
Yeah.
And that was in his teens. You know, he started playing when he was 11 years old. So we know now that, you know, because of what we know about concussions, in WWE now, and they're just so careful about all of that. Like, we don't, you know, we have such an incredible protocol that really is just amazing. But back in the 60s, nobody had that. So in the 60s and 70s, you know, my dad was, he was very proud of how hard he played. And so in his early 20s, in his 30s, in his 40s, we were able to, like, before I was even born, my grandmother was noticing different changes in my dad and different things. So I just think that my dad living most of his life with a brain injury, it escalated as he got older. It definitely, you know, it was coming to life more. And it takes years for CTE to, you know,
like, manifest itself.
Every case, I mean, I'm not a scientist, but every case is situational. But for my dad, like, for a long time, he was able to keep it together until he wasn't able to keep it together.
Yeah.
And now knowing and understanding what his brain injury was from those very, very early years, it makes so much sense. But when we were growing up, there was a lot of volatility. So we didn't have, you know, we were kids and we were, you know, my dad would lose his job. And then when he lost his job, we would, you know, we didn't have money to eat. We didn't have money saved in a, you know, for a rainy day.
It probably makes it easier to love him unconditionally moving forward as his daughter, knowing that he had things that he couldn't control.
Yes, actually, the book was such a therapeutic experience for me because after writing the book, I was really able to forgive my dad. I was able to let go and forgive him for everything that had happened when we were growing up because I was able to understand that there were so many times that I was like, does he just not love us? Does he just not care about us? Does he just not, like, why does he keep making these mistakes? Why is he missing flights? Why is he missing shows? Why is he making these choices? And so once we were able to unlock, you know, with the best brain doctors in the entire world, they're right out of Boston. Once we were able to unlock what was really going on and they were able to say, yes, this is very consistent with his early years, it just let me forgive my dad. And so there's a lot of people that are reading the book that my story is resonating with them because they're seeing a reflection of themselves in the book and they're going, wow, like, I get that. I can see that. I can relate to that. And you know, for us, like, if my grandfather hadn't stepped in and given us a place to live, I don't know when I was 10, 11, 12, you know, in those, my early teens, I don't know where we would have stayed.
Wow.
Because my mom was just trying to take care of us on her own, and my dad was out of control.
And he was so embarrassed that he couldn't even stay with you guys.
Well, he just had so much pride, and he was he always was trying to get it together, but he just never could get it together.
He didn't want to face your grandfather, right?
And he didn't want to face my grandfather. He still was a man that had so much pride. He was like a lion that still wanted to roar, but like he just couldn't get it together, and I don't think he had the capacity to. And so now I understand it, and I've totally forgiven my dad. But you know, it doesn't change the fact that when you're a kid, you go through all that, and so these early years made me want to be absolutely perfect when I got to WWE. I was like hell-bent on showing the WWE, you know, the upper management, that I was going to be nothing like my dad. I was going to be so perfect. I was going to be the best, you know, female wrestler that they've ever had. And so I had these really high expectations for myself where I would literally just do, I was like the ultimate people pleaser.
Yeah.
And so I write about that in the book too, because I was like, all I ever wanted to do was be what they wanted me to be. And then I realized that at the end of the book, I was like, be who you need to be. Mm. Be who you need to be for you. Don't worry about what Vince McMahon wants or what Triple H wants or what this person wants or what that person wants or what you think this person needs. Be you. And when you can really just be your true authentic self is when you do your best work.
Amen.
Yeah, right.
Amen.
You know, and that's really where I'm at is like, I'm just like, and it's cool because WWE, Triple H, the powers that be in the company, Nick Khan, everybody that's in the company and that's able to make really great decisions, like they're so supportive of me writing this book, doing this new character that I'm doing outside of WWE that I'm hoping to bring to WWE.
What's that?
I'm doing a different character. Actually, last April, this past April this year, I asked if I could do my first ever show outside of WWE for Bloodsport for a promotion called GCW.
Okay, yeah.
I got permission from WWE to go
while you're still an employee.
While I'm still under contract with WWE, and I built a new character, and I was like, I need to be this character that I've always wanted to be. This is Stu Hart's granddaughter from the dungeon. This is like that Stu Hart grit, you know, comes out with cornrows, just wears a black singlet, amateur wrestling shoes. I walk out with my Dungeon Fight Club and we go in the ring. When the bell rings, I go out there and I will not swear, but I beat the living beep, beep out of people. And the thing is that like, I love wrestling. So it's like when the bell rings, you better watch out because there's no woman that can hang with me. And I've proven that.
Love that.
And I'd like to see the women that can hang with me because it's going to be a showdown.
There you go.
Look at that.
I might be calling out Rhea Ripley.
Oh,
let's go, Rhea.
There you go.
You heard it.
I love Rhea. Rhea, by the way, she can look scary in the ring.